My friend, from April 29 to the 1st of May, I am running my free 3-day six-figure solopreneur challenge. Now, if you are a coach, consultant, or service provider, I'm going to teach you how to scale your business without burning out, without spending a cent on ads, without sleazy sales tactics, and without needing a huge audience. I will teach you how to upgrade your mindset to be able to call in this type of business and abundance. I'm going to teach you how to simplify to amplify your business, how to craft an irresistible offer that your dream clients are bursting to work with you, how to unlock a flood of organic leads, and how to master the art of the no-pressure sales calls that still convert like crazy, plus so much more. If you want the business of your dreams, making the income and impact of your dreams, register for free at shelaunch.com. I can't wait to see you there. In episode 559 with Radhik Sali, the executive chair of Wonderlust, we are talking all about workplace culture, aspirational branding, customer retention, resilience and failure, CEO mindset and habits, plus so much more. If you are a business owner or an aspiring entrepreneur, you are going to get so much out of this episode. Grab your pen and paper and let's dive in. Welcome to the Melissa Ambrosini Show. I'm your host, Melissa, best-selling author of Mastering Your Mean Girl, Open Wide, Comparisonitis, and Time Magic. And I'm here to remind you that love is sexy, healthy is liberating, and wealthy isn't a dirty word. Each week, I'll be getting up close and personal with thought leaders from around the globe, as well as your weekly dose of motivation so that you can create epic change in your own life and become the best version of yourself possible. Are you ready, beautiful? Hey, beautiful, and welcome back to the show. I'm so excited about this episode because Radhik is an incredible human being. He is the former CEO of Swiss and a brand visionary who revolutionized the vitamin and supplement industry. Yes, he did. Now, under his leadership, Swiss surged from a company worth $15 million with 30 employees to an astounding $2.1 billion enterprise with over 1,000 employees in less than a decade. Now, Swiss became Australia's largest global wellness company and the number one natural health brand in Australia and China. How amazing is that? It was awarded Australia's best private business in 2012 and the best place to work in Australia in 2015 and 2016. And in 2012, he won GQ's Australia's Entrepreneur of the Year award, which is just so amazing. He is a past CEO in residence at Melbourne University and is an honorary alumni at La Trobe University. Now, he used his proceeds from the Swiss exit to set up an investment group called Light Warrior, which is committed to creating shared value by investing in businesses that put culture first, are socially responsible, and environmentally conscious. All things that I am so passionate about. Now, he is the reinventor and executive chair of Wonderlust, a founder and director of Conscious Investment Management, Stratosphere, and Anthem. He has successfully started and reinvented 8 organizations and returned over 1,000 times the initial investment with 3 exits. How incredible is that? And this year, he co-authored a book, How to Build a $1 Billion Business, where he shares his insights for inspiring entrepreneurs and business leaders. And for everything that we mention in today's conversation and for the transcription, you can head to melissaambrosini.com/559. Now, like I said, grab your pen and paper and let's dive in. Radhik, welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you here. But before we dive in, can you tell us what you had for breakfast this morning?
I had a mushroom and egg toasty.
Oh, I love mushrooms. Delicious. I thought you were going to say some sort of like medicinal mushroom concoction, but all good.
Whole food.
Yeah, I love it. So I am so glad that we've finally been able to connect. Before we started recording, I was sharing with you how so many of our mutual friends have just absolutely raved about you and said, I have to connect with you. I have to get you on the show. So I am so pumped to have you here. I toured with your incredible company, Wonderlust, last year. which was just such an incredible experience. But I want to talk about you right now. Your resume is very impressive. You took Swiss vitamins, for those that don't know. Actually, I think everyone knows who Swiss is, right? So it is a vitamin and supplement company. And you took it from a net worth of $15 million to an astounding $2.1 billion. You've set up a conscious investment group, Light Warrior. You are the reinventor and executive chair of Wonderlust. Like I said, Nick and I toured with you guys last year, which was just amazing. You have done so many incredible things in your lifetime. I'd love to know, like, did you always have a passion for business? Like, how did you get here? And did you always know that you were going to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah, look, I felt like that I had a purpose to do things that meant something. Whether it was being an entrepreneur or not didn't become clear to me until I started working at Village Cinemas back when I was about 18 years old, when I was going to university, paying for that education, and had this part-time job at Village Cinemas shoveling popcorn, and quickly realized that I could get paid to learn the basics of business. And then the basics of business became really clear to me. It was about how you managed people and got them to do things were necessary for the team's goal and the organization's goal, and do it in a way where you remain an authentic person to who you are at work and outside of work. So that was a great blessing to learn early.
Yes. And so how did it all unfold? Like, how did you get into Swiss? Like, after you were shoveling popcorn, like, what was the next business step for you?
Well, I worked my way through the ranks from shoveling popcorn to tearing tickets to cleaning cinemas, closing cinemas and shifts and counting cash through to each role in operations at Village in Melbourne. And then I carried on to open cinemas in Europe. So the Czech Republic, Switzerland, Germany. I could speak Czech. I was very lucky. As a 23-year-old, I was in the right position and had taken my role so seriously that I kept getting these great assignments overseas. And then I came back and, you know, I was 26, 27, and the company had a 30-year-old CEO who had done well, but it didn't work out in the end. And so they were going to appoint another young CEO, and they appointed someone that probably taught me a lot about what not to do. So that inspired me to start looking in leadership. I'd say that inspired me to start looking sideways. You know, famous quotes like, if you want loyalty, get a dog, or firing someone by saying zap, or saying to our team during a Christmas holidays where, you know, we'd be at our busiest, I'd say, come and talk to our management team. Can you inspire them? And you'd come in and you'd say, oh, you know, to those of you having time off over Christmas, which was no one, have a lovely time with your family and so forth. And those of you that are working, bad luck. It quickly became apparent to me that was not the way to manage people. So I started looking sideways, and my father being a professor of surgery, my mother being a medical scientist, you know, dad had always lectured to me on the benefits of diet. He was the first person to talk about diet causing disease in Australian conventional medical circles in the 70s. And so I was born in 76. So I grew up with a background of that. He also was talking about meditation and doing research on meditation and how it would help chronic disease patients deal with their condition and also provide healing too. So it was pretty groundbreaking research, but he was laughed at the time. And so in this background, he would just come home every night with frustration. And so, you know, he eventually had his work published in British Medical Journal and JAMA, all the major publications, but it was 20 years later. And so we had these wonderful characters around us growing up that agreed with dad's thoughts and his intuition and also his research on what was the right way to treat people with sickness. And so all these wonderful characters, one of them was the managing director of Swiss. His mother had issues with HRT, and so she was, it was hormone replacement therapy. She was on a drug that was causing major side effects, and my father helped her out and changed it to a natural set of herbs and other bits of nutrition. So he remained on as a mentor to Michael, along with many others. So I grew up with this colourful background of amazing people throughout our wonderful wellness industry. And so that we did try and talk about coming across a few years earlier. I wasn't ready at that point, and I was lucky enough to be offered a role there and work my way up from operations manager to general manager, and eventually CEO after 2 years.
Wow. Wow, that is such an amazing story. And I just love, you know, that you have a father like that who has instilled all of this wisdom into you, and he was ahead of his time and people just weren't really ready for that type of wisdom to come through yet. Now, you know, it's like common knowledge, really. Well, especially in our spaces, in our wellness space. So I love that. Okay, so let's talk about, with all of your success, there is this underlying thread that your business and your businesses that you do, they don't just make like an astounding profit. They're businesses that also do good. So this was definitely a conscious choice for you. Talk to us about that, you know, wanting to grow and make profits, but also wanting to make a positive impact. Like, did that stem from your dad? Where did that come from? Or your work at Swiss?
Look, I just feel like I've always been in the lucky position where I've been encouraged to use my intuition. From a very young age, we would do, instead of playing sport on the weekends, we'd be dropped off to do creative dance, Japanese ink brush painting, yoga, meditation. And so, you know, as a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 year old, got a bit weird by the time I was 12, but then we went into karate, other things. But that sort of upbringing kind of gets you connected with what you feel is right. And so, you know, and at times when I've switched off that intuition, I've noticed my path goes down the wrong way. So it's just being in tune with that. And that's enabled a whole lot of success throughout my career, is kind of listening to what I feel's right. And what I feel's really right in our society, we're very lucky. We live in a great country where capitalism and democracy is thriving. And the next best system is a capitalist autocratic system. And so we've got to look after the system we're in. 4 out of 5 of us are business leaders, and it's up to us really for the state of society. So we need to project outwardly what we want around us.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love how in touch you are with your intuition, and I love that your parents were doing that at such a young age. It's so amazing. That's just awesome. Now, in your book, How to Build a $1 billion Business, and just for everyone listening, it is phenomenal. Everyone needs to get their hands on a copy, and I'll link to it in the show notes. You say a successful business is not just about profits, it's about culture. Now, when you walked into Swiss, what changes did you make to the workplace culture and why? Because I think a lot of people struggle in business because they don't have this part and leadership nailed. And so, you know, there's that common narrative of like, people are, you know, good staff are hard to come by, that sort of narrative. And that's just not a nice environment to be in. So what changes did you make to the workplace? Can you talk to us about the culture and why you did that and some leadership tips?
Yeah. So when I started at Swiss, it was really interesting. I was really careful, having been in an organization where, you know, culture was front and center early on, and then it changed as the business changed. So culture for me was really important. So I did a lot of research before I moved across, and we had a very supportive managing director at the time who later became my business partner. And he was a wonderful values-driven individual and was like a moral compass for the organization. The challenge for him was that he'd started in that business as a 15-year-old. And the business, you know, and I say this is the hardest part when you're going from zero to the first 10 million in your business. The business had grown and got through that part, but for it to really thrive, the founder needed to kind of step away from everything and not be involved in kind of the process and the detail, because it just was becoming too big to be across all of that. And empowering people and giving them a remit for what they can do and can't do is such an important step change in a business's growth trajectory. And a founder understanding that intuitively, which Michael was well ahead of, and, you know, again, showed his awareness of having to bring someone in with a, you know, big company process driven thought process, but also making sure that the right EQ driven leader. And I asked all the right things about the culture of the organization. I felt like it was a vent, because he pretended he wanted to recommend me for another role when he interviewed me. And I just vented on all the things that I see wrong about corporate culture. And at the end, he gave me a big hug and said, I'd like to offer you a job. And so it was set up right from the beginning with values being aligned. So I think that you need to make sure that you know, the organization is ready for that change and wants that change, and you're all aligned for, you know, putting values at the center of how you make a successful business. So the three things I did, the values were, whilst they were there, perhaps a little bit too passionately stepped out. There were 10 of them. It was a long document that was impossible to remember. And whilst Michael was very good at espousing them, as soon as people walked out of the room, they weren't part of the vernacular. So what we did is we simplified the values to the four Ps, which is people, principles, and passion, coming before profit. And then all of the work we did around our culture plan. So the three things that we implemented was a culture plan driven by values, and then would step out what examples for every area of the business of what it meant to be driven by the value of people. And because the value of people is quite different in the warehouse to what a salesperson would interpret. So you need to break it down into understandable steps. So then those values come alive and you're making decisions driven by your values. Then you have your business plan, which every organization should have. But, you know, like organizations, they regularly review their key performance against the business plan every month or every quarter. The same has to happen with culture. And it has to be just as important, that conversation about culture and how people are doing against it, and measurement tools, so essential, such as how you define what it is to deliver on things like passion and principles. And then you have a communications plan, which my mother is the greatest nag of my life and taught me a whole lot about management in a way that was very caring and came from the heart, but she was relentless. And so I suppose the difference would have been that if we could have been a bit more structured with less emotion, it probably would be around having agreements around when we would talk about how we would improve. So in our business, we would all sign off on, okay, when are we going to have permission to nag on culture? When are we going to have permission to nag about our financial results and how we're performing, and structure around that? So it's okay to give feedback. And this is the thing we have such a challenge with, is just talking freely around how we could improve. And so many workplaces, it's kind of people are too scared to give feedback or hear feedback. And how do we improve without that vital communication?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about meetings? Because there's lots of people that I've heard that say like meetings are just time sucking in a business, right? And yet I feel like in my company, they are so important. Like our weekly team meeting is so important. It's half an hour, but it's time to connect. It's time to share. Like that's when we give feedback and things like that. So what are your thoughts on meetings?
Look, I think that it's so essential to connect and talk and have honest conversations about what's happening. And so group meetings are essential. One-on-one meetings are really important too. And also you've got to have many levels of feedback going on. So we would do surveying regularly on how people were performing. I'd ask the team to measure me on whether I was the right leader going forward and what they expected me to change and improve. So, you know, that's brave, and you need to be brave to be a successful leader. And so the other really important thing is the ad hoc conversations that, you know, you go for coffee together or you make time just to chat where it's free-flowing, that conversation. So you get to the point on stuff. So I think it's really important to have a multifaceted communication approach.
But what about if you are a virtual team? All of my team is virtual, so you can't just like have a little coffee with someone, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I make sure in that situation, I have offices in Brunswick Heads and also in Melbourne, and I make sure that there are people that I phone every day and we speak on the phone, just like you'd go for a coffee together or speak and chat. You can get through that. But also I do try and make a point of getting physically together, you know, over, you know, whatever period of time, 3-6 months that we connect and we get to, you know, talk about the kind of deeper issues that happen as a result of being together.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I think it's so important. I'm the same as you. I think it is just imperative that in person, nothing beats it. Nothing beats it. I mean, having you in my home recording this would be a totally different experience to this virtual experience, but it's still amazing and I'm so grateful for it. But like, the nothing beats in person. I love it. For me, it lights me up so much. I just love being in someone else's energy and like feeling them. And yeah, for me, it's the best.
100%. And hence, you know, you performing with Nick at the True North events that we had were just extraordinary and seeing you in full flight. And I must thank you for your inspiring TEDx speech that you did. That got me back on track. I do meditate every day, twice a day for 20 minutes. But, you know, I was feeling a bit down and you just reinforced some key messaging that I needed to remember. So, you know, that every tool can be very useful in getting you back on track and making you, you know, connected with your intuition.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, during your time at Swiss as the CEO, you revolutionized the brand by making it very aspirational. And this became key to the company's success. So why are aspirational brands so powerful?
Well, when I was at Village, I'd go to barbecues and I was the center of conversation and we'd talk about, you know, what's the next Brad Pitt movie? When's Angelina Jolie going to have her next, you know, tour in Australia, supporting the movie that she might be launching? Have you met her? All that sort of thing. So I was the center of conversation. I went across to Swiss and I'd go to parties and I'd say, when you get to the ultimate question of where do you work? And I'd say, I work at Swiss, and people would say, what, the embassy? And then the vitamins. And then you'd sort of see them want to change the subject, because when you'd walk into a pharmacy, 90%, 95% of the brands would advertise for, you know, urinary tract infections or IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. So people would be like, oh, I just want to change the subject. You're going to go there. And then occasionally I'd get someone saying, I take Centrum. And I'd say, oh, yeah, why do you take Centrum? And they say, oh, it's because of Rob DiCostello. And in those pharmacy, there's a picture of Rob with the Centrum bottle in his hand. And I'd ask those pharmacists about why they gave so much space to Centrum. They must give the best margin in the category. And essentially they said, no, it's because they advertise 52 weeks of the year. And their advertising was a bit different. They had Rob DiCostello making it a bit more of a lifestyle product. And of course, if you look to the other side of the pharmacy, there'd be cosmetic products, there'd be perfume products with beautiful people proudly on display, lit up. And that sort of sparked that idea for creating aspiration. And so, you know, we're very fortunate that over the time, you know, back in 2005, people started to change their views on health. And now it's become the one thing we can all boast about is our next health kick, what we're doing from a cleanse point of view, what we're doing at the gym or if we're training for a marathon, all that sort of thing. There's not much else we can boast about without people getting a little bit up of what we're saying. So we rode that kind of wave of change, but we brought in personalities that people were fascinated with, and we presented it as a kind of their secret to their success. And yet we had a lot of science to back our product, and that's why people kept coming back to it. But we expanded the marketplace by bringing these vibrant personalities. It was over 500 in the end that we worked with.
Wow. And one of them was Nicole Kidman, which is just amazing. So for businesses who can't afford Nicole Kidman in their budget, what are some things that they can do to keep it aspirational?
Look, I think that you need to start with what your core business proposition is. And I think that if you're clear on that, it's about building authentic connections around that. And so those authentic connections need to be real and, you know, something that your customer base see as truly relevant to what you're trying to do. And so look at your circle of influence, the people that you regularly connect with, refine that connection and make sure it's unique, and you build on that position and grow from there. So for me at Swiss, you know, we had 70% retention of when people tried our product. So when you know you've got that great a product, the next step is to market it and tell people about it. And we started small. It wasn't small for the time, but with Ricky Ponting, we knew he took product. We called him. No one else was really, except for Rob DiCostello, was an ambassador in our category. And so it was a simple deal for us to do at that time, fortunately. And then our next step was, okay, we need a female base to the brand. And, you know, that became apparent when I went to Priceline and presented on what we were doing with Ricky Ponting. And the buyer said to me, who? And, you know, 75% of Priceline's audience is females and Cricket's audience is 70% of male. And so I went home and watched Mum, and she was watching Dancing with the Stars. And I'm like, what's this? And she goes, this is my favorite show. And it was the number one show on TV at the time. And the host was Sonia Kruger, and she had a whole lot of sass. I managed to get her number. I called her and I said, look, we've got this vitamin company called Swiss. And she goes, oh, I take that product. And so we did a deal, and Channel 7 wasn't that happy at the time because it wasn't, you know, we weren't the biggest organization. And mind you, we'd just made an advert with Ricky Ponting that was, you know, where I was driving in one morning with Hughesy and Kate on the radio on Nova. They were talking about the worst ads on TV, and we won. And I was excited. We got cut through it. they were pretty worried about what we were going to do with Sonia, but it worked out for the best and we grew from there. But I suppose what I'm saying is looking at your customer base, looking for those authentic connections, seeing if there's some aspiration or a story you can tell, and then grow from there.
Beautiful. I love that. Speaking of customer retention, in the world of business, a lot is spoken about customer acquisition, but customer retention is often overlooked. So you talk about this in your book, and I'd love to hear your take on this. Like, what have you learned about customer retention? Like, go more into this for me and how important it was for you working at Swiss.
Yeah, look, I think that it's always about going back to the reality of how your product is perceived and how it's experienced and continue refining it and improving that experience. So we were relentless about that. And it's the reason why we had the highest retention. It's the reason why our businesses now are a step better than whatever we've done in the past. It's because we always challenge ourselves to not rest on the last set of results being good enough. They needed to be better and we needed to wow ourselves. We didn't worry so much about our competitors. We worried about what we were doing and how we would keep raising the bar on the experience, on the offering. And, you know, this is why Wanderlust is kind of Swiss 2.0, where we have these amazing events that are a deeper experience for people. And it helps people walk away with tools that can support a supplement program. And then also we have a digital offering called Commune, which is like a Netflix for wellness. And it has inspiring teachers providing a wellness path forward, or people like your great self. You have ongoing messages that people can connect with and support, you know, a proper wellness program. So we like to introduce people to meditation and music and how it can change you by listening to positive music and stuff that upbuilds you rather than kind of the stuff that shreds out kind of water crystals inside if they're a bit too hardcore. So it's about trying to bring our best out and helping people access those sorts of tools.
Yeah, I love that. Beautiful. Now, I want to read two lines from your official bio. Okay, this is what it says. It says, as leader of Swiss, he should have been fired a few times and has had one business fail. Now, you learn most from failure. Now, that is a really unusual thing to include in a professional bio. And when I saw it, I immediately loved it. So can you talk to us about how you view failure differently to most people?
Yeah, look, I think that the fact is we are all human and we fail nearly every day. And three times is an understatement, probably 10 times I should have been fired. Every time I wasn't fired, I learned and I got better as a result of that. And I'd wear that like a badge of honor with the team and talk to my faults and say how we're so it'd hold me accountable to improvement and others to hold me accountable to stepping up. But also that giving people that freedom of wearing a failure like it was something that was we should talk about and we shouldn't hide so we can get better. And so, you know, as a leader, we've got to accept our failures. We need to accept we're human. And things do go wrong. And I'm incredibly lucky. A lot of people work extraordinarily hard and don't have the success I've been lucky enough to have. So things have gone my way. Yes, I've done everything I can to try and tilt the odds in my favor, but sometimes that's not enough. And that's just a fact of life.
Yeah. I love that. I want to dig into a specific instance of so-called quote unquote failure so that we can see your resilience in action. So can you tell us about the time that Kim Kardashian didn't show up for her paid appearance? What did you do? Talk to us about that.
Well, we had this great party going on at Spring Racing Carnival, and it was fantastic. It was a fantastic event, and we would watch Maya every year own the PR in the place. So, it, through media, newspapers, TV. And so we decided to invest $1 million in this party. The broadcast sponsorship, and we had 4 days to bring the party together and would bring great personalities along. And so to create kind of awareness off the back of that. And when our head of PR, who came across to us from Maya, And the reason why he came across is we had a conversation about doing that. I reached out to him because they were this the best at that time. And I told him that. And he said, thank you. No one's ever said that to me. And that's when he came across to work with us. And so he suggested we're going to get this individual called Kim Kardashian in. I had no idea who she was. I looked her up online and she was famous for a sex tape at that. I said, this is going to get some interesting PR for us. So, and probably not ambassador material ongoing at that time. Now she would be, hey, how things change. But if you're having a party, these are the sorts of interesting personalities that people will be interested in and partying alongside. And so she was going to come and we'd brilliantly put her on the last day, States Day, which is generally the slowest day for news and so forth. And she came out to Australia the week before on like the Thursday or the Wednesday. And she was against the background of being married for about 30 odd days to a famous basketball player. And all of a sudden that marriage was breaking down. And the poor thing publicly was asked questions about how that was going. And they announced their separation over that week. And so we're like, is she going to come or is she not? Is she going to go home to deal with obviously the breakdown of the marriage? And so we got to the Saturday morning and we got a text message saying that Kim's not coming. She's gone home. And so we quickly thought on our feet and got a cardboard cutout of Kim. And mind you, it was fantastic publicity. I remember flying with Qantas on the kind of Friday before. And you know how they had the Channel 9 news on there regularly back in those days. And the lead story was whether Kim was coming to our marquee or not. And it was just everywhere through media. And so, yeah, by the time we got to Saturday, the cardboard cutout was a massive hit and it got us just as much press. And we saved $100,000 in fees compared to attend. So it was a great outcome.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I love it. Thinking on your feet. And that's something you definitely have to do as a CEO. You have to pivot and you have to pivot fast and not be emotionally attached and just move. And that's something that I've learned running my company. And I want to talk to you more about this CEO mindset, because beyond the way that you view failure, I would love to know, like, what other aspects of your mindset are unique? What is it about the way you think that has led you to this series of huge successes, like in all of your businesses?
Yeah, I'm a little bonkers. I think you have to be on the edge and have some kind of predisposition to seeing the upside in everything, a positive solutions-focused mindset. Not ridiculously so. And, you know, we always understand the worst case. And, you know, my wife and I, Helen, we would talk about that if the worst case happened, we'd just get a caravan and move up to Byron Bay. And that's when Byron Bay was cheap and live by the sea. And that was okay. So, we, you know, what was there to lose, really? We could have a real go at making this thing work. And, you know, from the moment I saw the Swiss product as a kind of 12-year-old, 13-year-old, when my parents put it in my bathroom, I started going through adolescence and they said, you know, you should be taking this. And I saw the branding and I just had an instant connection with the Swiss brand and just intuitively felt right. And so knowing that I was on my right path and, you know, when I first started there, I'd talk about it being a $1 billion business and we will be bigger than our competitors and we're, you know, Blackmores was the biggest brand and that was $300 million in sales. We were selling $15 million worth of product. So it was a bit absurd, but I always felt whatever challenge was before us, we were on the right path and we were going to be successful in what we did.
I love that mindset so much. For someone listening, and you know, I'm curious too, for anyone listening who wants to develop that world-class entrepreneurial mindset, like where should they start? Besides having like, you know, more of a positive or optimistic mindset, like what other key components can we start to embody to have more of that world-class mindset?
I just think you've got to make that decision to be elite. And we all have this opportunity to be an absolute professional in our chosen path. And any professional that we see in from a public point of view, like a great sports person, a great musician, they make sacrifices and they practice and they're relentless about that path forward. Now, it's probably a more extreme path forward, but why waste your working hours turning up and not being there in full and giving it your all? give it your all. Success comes as a result of that. And so that sort of switch where you make decisions, that you focus on your circle of influence, the things you can control, such as making decisions to look after yourself, eat the right foods, do the right amount of exercise, connect with your partner. You know, during our most stressful periods, we made sure that we would go for a walk first thing in the morning. So when my mind was clearest, our minds were clearest, we could communicate and talk, and I wouldn't give her just my stressful self that came home every night and kind of was under pressure and short because of that stress. Or, you know, make decisions like, you know, for 3 years when things got really difficult at Swiss, chose not to drink, and knowing that because of that level of stress, I would drink a little bit more. But, you know, these are things that these high performance individuals do in other industries that we all look to and go, oh, wow, they're amazing individuals. Those are the sacrifices they need to make. So there will be periods, you know, you'll have to change gears and be really receptive to what's going on and connected to yourself. Meditation has just been a key theme for at least most of my life, but finding a regular rhythm and connection to a meditation that worked for me, where I look forward to it every day. And as I say, I've been doing it for twice a day for over, I think it's over 10 years. But before that, you know, I tried many different forms and it felt like kind of watching paint dry, and it shouldn't feel that way. It should be something you really look forward to and you notice the difference in yourself. And these are the things you need to continue to refine to ensure you bring your best self to something that is so important, your main game in life.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I just want to go more into this conversation around habits. So my husband, Nick, and I, we created this game-changing program called She Launch, where we coach female coaches, consultants, and service providers to hit six figures in their business without the burnout. And that part is really important because I've burnt myself out and health is such a huge part of my life. So I want to help women have the businesses they want without sacrificing their health and their relationships. So I'm always telling our clients that as an entrepreneur, you are your most important asset. So for you, with so many balls in the air and being a husband and a dad, like, what are the regular habits or practices do you rely on to keep yourself thriving, full of energy, and performing at your best? Like, you've mentioned meditation, you've mentioned eating well. Like, what else is there that's in your toolkit?
Yeah, like, I think you got to, I struggle with this whole work-life balancing because it's kind of like separating the two. I say work-life integration. And if you cannot have it integrated, because it will happen, we've got phones that deliver messaging 24/7. So we are inundated with messaging all the time. So if you get a message that you know, puts you in a place of stress on a weekend because you're just getting those messages, it's going to happen. And so accepting that, you know, that's what you're passionate about and you're doing what you love. We're in a great country where we're able to really pick and choose in a lot of situations what we want to do. And just make sure, you know, and if you don't want that noise on a weekend, you choose a different profession that doesn't provide, you know, doesn't provide for that. So I think that it needs to feel like that you're doing something you care about. And like everything in life, whether it's work, whether it's personal life, whether it's just the daily stress of external challenges or the noise of media and fear, we're surrounded by stuff that's going to put us off our game, put us off our flow. And so it's about choosing where you want to put that energy and accepting that, like, I love this analogy of, you know, I do yoga twice a week, where, you know, a yoga lesson is a great mini run of what a day in the life represents, where you go through bliss, you go through pain, you go through inertia, you go through when's this going to end, through to back to this feels fantastic. And then you end with this beautiful shavasana, which is like going to bed each night and kind of powering down and looking forward to the next day or the next yoga session. And so practicing things like that, where you get used to, you know, the yoga teacher says to be smile when something's kind of a painful maneuver, you know, lean into it, breathe, regulate your breathing. These are great messages for life that I step out every day in ensuring that I breathe properly, that I realize that when something doesn't go to plan, that's okay. That's life. And don't be so surprised by it. Pick yourself up So these are all things to just make these things a bit easier to deal with. Knowing that I exercise four times a week for an hour, I'll go for a stand-up paddleboard as well. That's my new board meeting, and get out there with a friend and talk with them about life, and make sure I have a balance of people that, you know, I want to talk about other things other than my work, but also have people that are passionate about, you know, the industries I'm in so I can learn more. So surrounding myself with people of different backgrounds, all ages, shapes, genders, the whole lot, to share their kind of insight and understanding and somewhat some baggage as well on how they've kind of dealt with stuff. So then you can vent and connect. And, you know, listening to people that are out there trying to bring their best self. As I said, your TEDx speech really helped me at a time of need. You know, type in to a TEDx what you're kind of struggling with. You'll get some great topics covered and some inspirational people that can bring you back. So I think it's just having that methodology and program around you that can help you and support you and make you feel more confident in the assets we have, that, you know, you're doing everything you can to be at your best for work and those around you, and having good communication structures in place. You're going to fall over. This whole notion of again, going back to failure, this whole notion of ego getting in the way of just apologizing and letting go when you can see that you've upset someone, whether you've meant to do it or not, it's okay to say, look, I didn't mean to do that, and accepting that. So, and just checking in regularly with how you've been perceived are all things that really have helped me.
I love that. And then what about helping you do your best work, like laser focus and have like more and better ideas? Are there any tools or habits that help you do that? Like for me, even just like going for a walk, that does help me. But do you have any other little tools or hacks or habits that you do to really help you laser focus, do your best work, have ideas, things like that?
Yeah. So I have many steps that are kind of part of my success regime, from, you know, supplements and even just the ritual of going through taking some of our liquid herbs. I love that process and knowing what function each of them have. I have a set of herbs for stress. I have a set of herbs for focus. I have a set of herbs for sleep. I have a set of herbs for everyday well-being as well. So that, even just that, making that choice to be in that frame of mind by setting things up, by taking that set of adaptogens that are required to help me through a stressful situation, is a change of mindset. So these triggers, like if I do a conversation like we're doing now, is I'll meditate beforehand always. I need an hour before and I need to settle myself so I'm in my best state. So we're not carrying the baggage of the conversation beforehand. We're giving our all to this most important moment, which is the present, through to, yeah, going for a walk, taking a break, or just enabling time where you can go and do those things that you always want to do, but actually creating space in your calendar to go and do that rather than it always being there as something you really want to do. I think making time for yourself is the most essential thing. So then you're able to step up and give your all.
Absolutely. Tell me what your vision with Wanderlust is. I feel like it's just going to keep soaring high. And I want to know, what is your vision for it?
Well, I think that we'll take one product, for example, our omega-3, which is a plant-based omega-3. And so there aren't enough fish in the sea for our population to keep growing like it is without, you know, really any fish that's fished out of the sea should be eaten. And so a plant-based omega-3 is a better form of omega-3s, because that's what fish eat to create omega-3s. It's full of omega-3. It carbon abates while it grows as well. So it's very sustainable. It doesn't carry heavy metals or plastics because it's very small nutrition that doesn't load up like, a tuna or a swordfish does, where the recommendations only to have best once a week because of the heavy metals inside. And, you know, they don't require antibiotics like a salmon requires. And so, and they don't leave a mess in the sea as a result of farming practices. So you've got this great natural product that can be made into a veggie cap. Fish oils are made in bovine capsules. So they're beef as well. So you've got two very unsustainable ingredients you're taking every day. And we need omega-3s to be at our best. It's part of our growth in our brain development, our joints. It's works as like a lubricant for our blood and our veins and our heart. So we need to supplement omega-3 because those other forms, yeah, we probably don't get enough of in our natural diet. The Japanese do. That's why they're the longest living people in the world. They eat fish every day. And so, yeah, making those choices that are better for the planet, in turn, better for us as humans. And, you know, when you're talking about wellness, it's learning to love yourself and making those choices so you can love others. And then when you learn to love others, you want to love the planet. And Wonderlust is omnipresent in that. And then supporting it with this program of community and events where people are getting together and inspired by great leaders, great personalities, and shared tips for success that are not only about supplementation, but about lifestyle, mindset, through to inspiration and just love and seeing that there are others on this path of purpose.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. I love your plant-based omegas. I take them. They're incredible. I've actually run out, but I absolutely love them. And yeah, I just think we can make a difference by simply just shifting that. We're really making a difference. So I love that. And your events are incredible. If anyone has not been to one of your Wonderlust True North events, you need to do yourself a favor and go. They are amazing. Like I said, Nick and I toured with you guys last year and it was just amazing. Like the people that you meet. Actually, in my office behind my wall where I'm recording right now is my vision board. And there is a photo of Nick and I on the Wonderlust stage up there on my vision board because, you know, we love speaking on stages together. And so that is up there. So the Wonderlust sign is there and Nick performing is up there. So I've got Wonderlust right in the front of my heart. But yeah, I absolutely love your events. I think they are incredible. They're just the best fun. They're life-changing. So if you haven't gone to one, please do. You will just love it. Grab your friends, go together. And it's so fun. But I'd love to hear, like, what is your definition of success? And what do you attribute your success to?
Yeah. First of all, big congratulations on making it work, working with your husband or your nearest and dearest. And it's like, I did that. Helen was our director of marketing for 8 years at Swiss and did an astonishing job in growing our brand. And it was an amazing partnership. 99% of the time it was pure bliss, but the 1%, when it got hard, it was very difficult.
I am definitely not going to be the poster girl for this and say it's all rainbows and butterflies. It is hard work working with your beloved. It's the best and it's hard. And it's also the best and it's hard. And, you know, there's some times where I'm like, oh, I love this so much. And then there's other times I'm like, oh, I wonder what it would be like if we were just husband and wife.
I don't think we'd accept that. And I think that's part of this kind of definition of a success that I talk about is that I really want to go into a workplace where I'm surrounded by people I love and are truly inspired by, and they are hopefully a little bit inspired by me. And we kind of have this kind of healthy friction where a lot of the time it's great, but there are challenging times where we lift each other and we grow. And there might be times where it's time for our paths to kind of go in a different direction, and that's okay as well. So I look to always have friends, family, and if we're hiring someone from outside that kind of circle, it's getting to know them and making sure that we really like them. And the other thing I'm really aware of is you're not really having to like them on the fact that they're similar to you or kind of a friend's point of view. It's a respect thing as well. And also understanding your strengths and weaknesses and surrounding yourself with people where, you know, they are better at you in a modality that they've chosen to focus on. And we're all a little bit better at something than the average person. And we need to remind ourselves practicing what we're good at is as important as developing the skills that we're not so good at. And knowing what we're good at is essential in leading a team. So then you can pick those people around you that complement and help you create a team that's empowered and focused on the things that are important to you. And so what's important for me is a purpose-driven organization, something that's giving something back. And a great example of that is our Impact Fund. It is now one of the largest in the country. We're one of the biggest providers of disability housing. We're the only provider of at-scale social and affordable housing. We buy land in partnership with First Nations people. We just bought 60,000 acres of broken down cattle, old land for, that was used for cattle. And we're regenerating that in partnership with the First Nations, the original elders of that land. And there are a number of sacred sites on that land. And through this process of regeneration, we're providing jobs for the original nation there and the landholders. And we're providing a commercial return to, you know, we have one of the biggest pension funds in the world. We're top five. And so we should be using that money to solve society's greatest challenges. And so we're inspired by that. There are a bunch of bankers that helped us sell the Swiss business that are conscious and driven to kind of create better outcomes. And it just shows you can create purpose in all sorts of work that contributes back to society. So, and that land after that 20 odd year period of lease will deliver that return, but then also will give back the land to the original landholders, which is a wonderful story. And it just goes to say that, you know, our system can be continually improved if we think about how we can contribute to it and make it better.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to hear now, if you had a magic wand and you could put one book in the school curriculum of every high school around the world, besides your book, let's presume that's in there because it's incredible and absolutely should be, what is one other book you would choose for girls and boys like that 16, 17, 18-year-olds?
Got one here. Right behind me, The Golden Sequence by Johnny Pollard. It's marked up and has notes right throughout. It's a wonderful book on, I suppose, reclaiming our humanity and connection with our intuition. And if we could learn that from a young age, what a magic thing that would be for society.
Yes, I've had Johnny on the podcast and I've read that book and it's incredible. I'll link to it in the show notes as well as your book. But yes, it is incredible. Definitely do yourself a favor and get that book. Now, I would love to talk about how your day looks. Like I said, you are a very full, successful businessman. You also are a husband. You also are a dad. Talk to us through a typical day in your life with all of your little rituals and routines, like your morning routine. I'd love to hear how a quote-unquote typical day in your life goes.
It's funny, my life really hasn't changed much in the kind of structure that it is, even though I've had life-changing wealth occur. I tried not working and kind of just having the money invested and me not having to worry about anything but myself. And I blew myself up. I wasn't in a great place. I realized that I need to do things. I need to give back. I need to be of service to people. And so my day is full of interactions where I'm driving our businesses, dropping off my daughter to school or picking her up, having a good balance of that. Things that, you know, things like movement classes, yoga, working out through to physio and body movement are a big feature of my week to week. So that's kind of this balance of doing stuff that helps me feel energized, connecting with friends, always have a structure of kind of a program of social stuff that complement what I'm doing. And then always have take like the occasional meeting outside of the square of what I normally do, just so, you know, you never know how you could be inspired by someone else's thoughts or kind of angle on stuff or how it could help you do more of what you do. And ensuring a quality time for my partner and us to just talk, particularly if I'm traveling, which I do a lot, is just checking in regularly on the phone or doing some video calls as well with my daughter, my wife, and just making sure you kind of make time for that. I'm in Melbourne at the moment, my parents here. I went around there at 9:30 at night last night and was with them for a couple hours. And so just ensuring you've got this ongoing thing that bring energy to your life, bring balance. And yeah, it's not always going to go to plan, but making sure you have timeouts like a meditation that enables you to deal with when things don't go to plan or that walk that you go on or that podcast that you listen to, make space for all of that. And I've found the more I am kind of structured and have those things planned out, the more likely it's going to happen and occur.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Like coming back to what I was saying before, like we are our most important asset and we need to take care of ourselves. Like imagine if everyone just took radical responsibility for themselves, for their health, stopped projecting all of their stuff on other people and just took responsibility for our own health and happiness, like we would be in such a different place. So I want to inspire everybody to do that. Create space in your day for you. Fill yourself up because you're going to show up as a better mother, a better father, a better boss, a better friend, a better daughter, whatever it is. You're going to show up as the best version of yourself when you take that time for you. So for example, before we jumped on, before we started recording, I shared with you that my daughter, for some reason, she had a nightmare and she woke up at 3:30 this morning. So from 3:30 to 5, I was trying to get her back to sleep. An hour and a half, I was trying to get her back to sleep. And then she finally went back to sleep. I went back to sleep. I usually am up at like 4:30. And I ended up waking up at around 6 o'clock. And I was like, I could either sleep for another hour or I could go and go for a walk and go and have a sauna. And I did that. And I'm so glad that I did because it just filled me up, really filled me up to start my day. So fill yourself up. No matter what is going on in your life, like you can find 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, we can find those times. It's just about prioritizing yourself. So I love that you mentioned that.
Exactly. I just think that understanding what gives you energy and being aware of that and not getting in the way of it and enabling yourself to do it like you took that moment to go for it, where, you know, we always get that kind of fork in the crossroads of life where we can make the right choice by ourselves or the wrong choice. And we know we occasionally, because we're human, we do make that right choice, but just trying to make that right choice more often than the wrong one will start to create this element of self-care that enables us to bring our best.
Absolutely. All right. I've got 3 rapid fire questions for you now. Are you ready?
I'm nervous.
Don't be. Okay. What is one thing that we can do for our health? Just one thing that we can implement and start doing today.
I think it's just picking the healthier option whenever you're presented with a menu.
Yeah. Beautiful. Easy. We can all do that. What is one thing that we can do today for our wealth?
Choosing to be elite of what we do.
Yeah. Beautiful. And what is one thing that we can do for more love in our life?
Love ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. That comes back to taking that responsibility. I totally agree. This has been so beautiful. I've absolutely loved connecting with you. Is there anything else that you want to share before we wrap up?
I just want to thank you for the service you provide to everyone. Obviously, it's very fulfilling for you and millions of others. So we really appreciate what you're doing. More of that in our world, please.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been such a delight to connect with you. To have you here. I'm so grateful that our paths have crossed in this lifetime and for all the incredible work that you are doing. Like, you are just changing so many lives. I've got full goosebumps. Like, you are just impacting, you are inspiring, you are helping, you are serving so many people. Like, I don't even think you know or can comprehend, like, the extensiveness of your reach and what your company and everything that you touch has done, and now your book as well. So I want to thank you for that. And I want to ask you on behalf of the listeners, like, how can I and the listeners give back and serve you? What can we do to serve you today?
Look, I think that just doing our best to create circumstance where you recreate those magic moments that I've had along the way where I'm talking to someone's partner at a social event and they say, oh, look, my husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend is so much a better person as a result of working in one of our organizations. So culture is just the way forward for us to continue to improve this magic society we live in.
It's so important. So important. Well, you are such an inspiration and an expander for me on what it means to be a leader. Like, I'm not perfect. Like, I am human and I am a tired mom at times and I don't always show up as my best self. And then I'm like, oh gosh, I could have said that more nicely, or I could have, you know, said this like that. And I'm not perfect. And I want to be a better leader. I truly do. Like, I'm constantly learning and growing and evolving. So you're such an expander for me. So thank you so much. And I'm just so grateful for all the incredible work that you are doing in the world. And we'll link to your book and your incredible events and everything to do with you in the show notes for people to go and find and learn more about you. But thank you for being here. It's been such a delight.
You're beautiful. Thank you.
I could sit with that man for hours. I got so much out of today's episode and I feel really inspired to up my leadership game and just become a better leader in my business. There are so many areas of growth for me in this space. And so I'm inspired and I hope you are too. And if you loved this conversation, please subscribe to the show and leave me a review wherever you listen to your podcast, because that means that we can inspire and educate even more people together. And it also means that all of my episodes will just pop up in your feed so that you never have to go searching for a new episode. Now, come and tell me on Instagram at Melissa Ambrosini what you got from this episode. I would love to connect with you and hear from you. My DMs are just so fun. You know, every time a new episode comes out, I get flooded with messages. So please come and connect with me and tell me what you got from it. And before I go, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being here, for wanting to be the best, the healthiest, and the happiest version of yourself, and for showing up today for you. You rock. Now, if there's someone in your life that you can think of that would really benefit from this episode, please share it with them right now. You can take a screenshot, share it on your social media, email it to them, text it to them, do whatever you've got to do to get this in their ears. And until next time, don't forget that love is sexy, healthy is liberating, and wealthy isn't a dirty word. Don't forget to head to shelaunch.com to register for my free 3-day six-figure solopreneur challenge from April 29 to May 1st. I am so excited to see you there.